We do not, this is how you pronounce any individual as alcoholic, but
we're going to be meeting Kim L. Now, Kim L is a Southern Belle from Alabama. She has lived over there in the Alabama area for over 40 years. She has two sponsees named George and Clarence. They are her puppies and her puppy dog. Oh, wait, not her sponsees. Those are her dogs, and she loves them very much. She is a dog lover, straight from growing up in Alabama. I do believe she's local now, but she might have to share that with you. If we could give a warm Southern Valley group welcome to Kim L. That would be wonderful.
Hey, everybody. Kim L., alcoholic addict. Thank you for having me. Tammy, thank you for inviting me to speak. I'll get you back somehow, girl. So, as you can tell by listening to me, I lived in the South for a while, but I am a Californian. I was born here in the 60s. I won't tell you what 60 year that was. But anyway, I was born in California. I am an alcoholic and addict. I have, I believe, 436 days clean and sober today. I used clean and sober because many times in my life I have been clean but not sober. So today I am clean and sober. As I stated, I moved to Alabama and lived there for over 40 years, lived there when I was a young child. So I got to tell a quick redneck joke. I hope I'm not going to insult anybody, but I think it'll break the ice and it'll make me feel a little bit more comfortable. So there's two redneck men on the street. One says to the other redneck, "Hey, buddy, what you got in that bag?" The other redneck says, "Chickens." The other one says, "Hey, if I guess how many chickens you got in that bag, will you give me one?" And the other one says, "I'll go a step further than that. If you guess how many chickens are in this bag, I'll give you both of them." Everybody get the joke? Okay, anyway, all right. Don't give up my day job, right? Okay, so let me start out by saying, moved to Alabama when I was a kid. Parents were married when I was born. I also had a brother who was 5 years older than me. He has since passed away from this disease. I, on the outside, looked like I lived in a house that was great, the great American home, but on the inside, a lot of dysfunction was going on. There was abuse and neglect going on. And early on, I learned how to lie, cheat, and steal to get what I wanted or needed out of life. So early on, at the age of 5, I was already exhibiting some alcoholic behavior. At about the age of 5, I started a love affair with my first mood-altering substance, which was food. For most of my life, I was morbidly obese. At the age of 7, I was actually obese already. And I would use food to mood alter for most of my young life. I was a late bloomer with the alcohol. My first drink wasn't until I was 19 years old. And I didn't really like the taste of it at the time, but I did like the way it made me feel. But I lived in a very devout, strict home, and so I didn't have many opportunities to drink, and I was too afraid to get in trouble. So I didn't experiment much with alcohol when I was younger. In my 20s, I began my next addiction, which was being promiscuous and being involved with men, and they became my higher power. I didn't know what a higher power was at that time, but I was addicted to relationships. Again, mood altering, trying to make myself feel good inside by using something outside to do that. Suffered with low self-esteem, always never fit in, always felt different, didn't understand why. In order to make myself feel better, I ended up going back to college to become an RN. Graduated from college early in my 30s, and within 2 years of being an RN, I had a back injury and was introduced to narcotics. And that became my drug of choice and addiction for that period in my life. I was given prescriptions, and because I was in the medical field, could manipulate friends and other coworkers in order to give me what I wanted, and I was full-blown with that addiction. Rumors started at work. Someone mentioned that I needed help. I was in complete denial, but I was told if I did not get help that they would turn me into my board of nursing at the time. And so to get my ass out of the sling, I do what I always do. I get very compliant and start following the rules. So I went through rehab for my first time at that point, early in my 30s, and got clean. I won't say I got clean and sober because I was in denial. I did everything that was expected of me. I was the poster child for recovery, but I was living a lie the whole time. I didn't really believe that I was an addict. Would mix alcohol at that point somewhat, but not much. Mostly the drugs, still food. So went through my first rehab, got a sponsor, so to speak, that I could manipulate that didn't make me work the steps, lied on my paperwork to the Board of Nursing, lied about my court card, so to speak, would falsify the record, so to speak, list names on there. I wasn't even going to meetings at that point. I was lying my way through because I didn't have a problem. For somebody that had such low self-esteem, I was very, very arrogant. So ended up having about a 7 or 8 year period of being clean, not sober, and had a car accident. Again, was prescribed pain medication. Addiction became full-blown again. At that point, I began to manipulate again, lie, same exact, same story, rinse and repeat, went through treatment, still didn't think I had a problem, manipulated my way through, bluffed my way through, had everybody believing that I had my shit together when I didn't. Still wasn't dealing with the things that made me feel bad about myself, still wasn't working on my character defects. Still lying, cheating, and stealing. Began to steal from work a little bit at that point. Went through rehab again. That was the second time rehab. Ended up going back to college to advance my nursing career, to get a higher degree and increase my profession. Was able to do that. Was able to get licensed. Was able to work in my chosen field. And when I was finished being monitored by the Board of Nursing for the second time, I quit working any kind of a program at all. Not that I was really working one before, but I quit going to meetings, quit hanging out with people in recovery. And I never really trusted the people in recovery because I didn't think that I was the same as them. So in 2015, I ended up moving back to California to be closer to my family. My parents had divorced since then. My mother had been remarried, had another child. I'm very, very close to her. It's my younger sister. Was estranged from my dad and brother. My brother suffered from alcoholism. He died in May. He was an alcoholic. He also had some symptoms with COVID. I do say he died from this disease because I know that if he had not had that alcoholism going on, he probably would have had a fighting chance with COVID because he wasn't that old. He was just 62. Moved to California, started working a ton of overtime. I was addicted to work, still addicted to food, rarely using alcohol, would get a prescription for pain medicine for things here and there. Ended up having two surgeries. I had gastric bypass surgery to lose weight and lost over 170 pounds. Couldn't medicate with food anymore. Started medicating with pills again. Addiction was full blown. Started drinking alcohol along with it. Became an alcoholic as well. Was always an alcoholic. Just had always avoided it because one of the things that I forgot to mention was my mom. Later in life became an alcoholic and addict, and there's a strong history of it in my family, so it's like the perfect storm. So after my surgery, I was using pills, I was drinking alcohol, and I got the bright idea that I could start stealing medicine from work, too. So I started using drugs from work. So my addiction had gone full-blown. Each time, more consequences, three jobs left due to addiction. I always said, hey, I left those jobs. I didn't really lose those jobs, right? But it was all due to my addiction. So addiction and alcoholism. So my last day at work, 436 days ago, I was impaired at work caring for patients. And someone happened to notice and came to me, and I was asked to go drug screen, and I knew the jig was up. I did not go to drug screen, but I knew that I was positive for everything under the sun. So I resigned my position, and the next day I called the Board of Nursing and told them that I needed help. And this time I knew I needed help. I was really scared because at that point in my life, every day when I was going to work, I would pray to God to please help me not use, not steal, not drink, not do all those things, not be who I had become. I was basically living to use and drink, and that was it. I had no life, no social life, spiritually bankrupt. You know, we mentioned I was raised in the South. Y'all know I had to be a Southern Baptist for a while, so I was scared to hell of God. And then I lived with my aunt and uncle for a while, and they were Mormon, so you can only guess how that went for me. So anyway, anybody that's Southern Baptist or Mormon or redneck, I'm sorry. But anyway, I was very fearful of God. I was ashamed of who I was, and I certainly didn't want to admit it to God. And God, I thought, had never been there for me. I thought he was always against me. My life was shit. And that was all due to God. It wasn't due to me. So here I'm asked to come into a spiritual program and accept God as my higher power, or something as my higher power. And, of course, I chose God because that's kind of the way I was raised. But in doing so, I had to really change my concept of God. So in doing that this time, I had to ask for help. And it was already coming about in my last days of using and drinking, because I was using every day. I was stoned out of my mind. I was driving back and forth to work with my precious dogs in the car. When I would go places, they would be with me. I didn't take them with me to work, of course, but I loved them more than life themselves. And so, I mean, I had really dropped to an all-time low. And I would pray to not drink and use that day, and within 15 minutes, I would be manipulating, trying to get my hands on something. So that's how the addiction and alcohol had progressed for me. And I was scared. I knew then I was an addict and an alcoholic, and I had to get some help. So I called the Board of Nursing. I turned myself in. I relinquished my privileges in my chosen field. And I went to an intensive outpatient treatment center. I had already been clean 14 days when I started treatment. So they didn't think I needed inpatient treatment. Luckily enough, this time I got into a program that helped. You know, living in the South, in the Bible Belt, all addicts and alcoholics are trash. They're going to burn in hell. And that was kind of how I felt when I went through treatment those few times. I don't know if it's because California is more liberal, or maybe I was just broken down so bad this time that I finally decided to take some suggestions. But I got into this rehab and I started listening, and I did all the things that I'd heard over the years that didn't practice. This, like, look for the similarities, not the differences. And so I started thinking, oh, yeah, that guy does something different than I do, but God, the feelings behind the reason why he used and drank are the same reasons I used and drank. So I started noticing the similarities, not the differences. And I started doing what was suggested of me. I did still trying to manipulate things, got my first sponsor, somebody that I knew that was in the program that I thought would do what I wanted her to do. So I was still trying to manipulate things. We didn't really see eye to eye on the spiritual concept of the program. And so I ended up firing her, and there was someone in one of the groups that I was going to every day at noon here in Hanford, and I ended up asking her to be my sponsor, and she agreed. So let me talk about the now. So I talked about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. So the sponsor that I have has a sponsor who has a sponsor. She makes me work. I shouldn't say she makes me, but she does. She makes me work the steps. I just completed my 12th step. So we're about to start working on the 12 traditions, and then we're going to redrop the rock. I know that's not AA approved literature, but we're going to do it anyway. Still got that little bit of a rebel in me. But anyway, working the steps, admitting I was powerless over drugs and alcohol, big step for me. Because first of all, I had to admit that I was an alcoholic and an addict. I had not done that in 27 years. So that was a big step for me. Turning my will and life over to God, big step for me. Again, afraid of God. Afraid he won't give me what I want. Still afraid he won't give me what I want, but I'm better at trusting him these days. Working the fourth and fifth step. Y'all, I thought I was a sweet, petite, southern belle, that I loved everybody and everybody loved me, but I had 75 resentments on my fourth step. I had people on my four-step that I couldn't even remember their names or why I was pissed off, but they were on there. Some lady somewhere did me wrong. So, and you know, in the South, I can call somebody a bitch as long as I say bless their heart after, right? So I did that a lot during my fourth step, okay? But working the fourth and fifth step, finally getting clean and honest, y'all, it was the same thing over and over and over. I was self-centered, jealous, self-serving, manipulating, all these different things every time I could turn everything back around to me. And it was just an eye-opener. The other eye-opener was when I looked at my consequences and my how many jobs I had changed due to my active addiction and alcoholism, and the money that I had lost and the money that I had spent on different things. I've also been addicted to shopping. You name it. I can use it to mood alter. So I think that was kind of the beginning for me. My sponsor came to my house and we were together for 8 hours that day processing the fourth and fifth step. And I was so nervous. I was eating different snacks and I was chewing so hard on a sugar baby, I pulled the crown out of my tooth. That's how hard I was chewing. I was so afraid to share. But anyway, I've since fixed my tooth. I'm from the South, so I believe in having dental work done. So anyway, all right. So made it through the 12th step. So spiritual awakening, I think that's probably been key for me. Having a God of my understanding, being able to rely on him. I've made good friends in the program. I've got a really good friend who's logged on here tonight. I won't break her anonymity, but we occasionally talk about the spiritual peace and God and how our higher power is making a difference in our life. And that's so refreshing to have somebody to talk to about that and bounce ideas off of with. I work the steps with my sponsor, as I said. I also do some other support groups that are... Sorry, somebody just called in. I also do some other support groups that were suggested to me by the Board of Nursing and some that were not suggested. I have done service work. I was a secretary for a meeting for 6 months early on. I am going to be able to be a sponsor now that I've worked the steps. I'm looking forward to doing that. Just being of service, speaking at these meetings, doing different things like that. I do self-care now. I think a lot of what was going on before is I had lost who I was or who I wanted to be. I wasn't in touch with my core values. And so doing this program and becoming honest about who and what I am has allowed me to get back in touch with my core values. And one of the things that I like to do is to be of service to others. You know, obviously I'm in the medical field, and so that comes along with that. Oddly enough, I have been off work for 14 months, and the Board of Nursing has approved me going back into my chosen field. And, you know, old habits die hard, all that self-negative talk about nobody will ever hire me and different things like that. But I just was given a job offer, and hopefully it's going to go through. But those are the promises that are in the book that they talk about, that no matter what you lose in active addiction and alcoholism, if you do the next right thing and work an honest program, everything that you lost will be given back to you in some form. And so I'm really beginning to believe that. I always thought that was a bunch of bullshit before, but I can actually see it working in my life. I didn't go off my notes. I'm looking on here to see what else I haven't talked about. You know, for me, people say, well, what's different this time? There's a lot of things. First of all, I finally admitted that I'm an addict and alcoholic. I cannot use drugs. I cannot use alcohol. Because when I do, I start lying, cheating, stealing, and manipulating, and I become the person that I don't want to be, and I become the person that my higher power doesn't want me to be. I want to be a good person. I want to live the straight and narrow these days. I think before I didn't really want to. I wanted people to think that I was doing that, but I didn't really want to. I wanted to live the way I was living. That's why I chose to continue doing it. And that's a hard pill to swallow because I want to be that good person now and to look back at the person that I was. And the funny thing about it is a lot of people until my addiction got really bad would have never guessed that I was an addict. Always the person that stayed late, always the person that came in on our off days, never said no, people pleaser, but that was all about manipulating people to get them to do what I wanted them to do. Now I'm kind to people because I want to be kind to people and I want to stay that person. You know, the people pleasing piece, a funny little story about that. People pleasing to manipulate people to do what I wanted them to do or to people to like me. We've got a joke in my family about in the 90s, I was living in an apartment and I didn't even own a lamp, but I had a group call me on the phone to ask me to donate funds to their charity and they would send me a whole case of light bulbs if I donated. And I donated $50 and got a case of light bulbs and I didn't even own a lamp. So if that's not alcoholic behavior, I don't know what is. But anyway, just so that somebody would like me. And I've always craved that somebody would like me or love me or make me feel at home. And you know what? That's what I've got out of this program. I've got a group of women that are in my sober network that I talk to every day, either by phone or by text. I know I can call them and say, I'm having a shitty day or I'm having a great day. And no matter what, they're going to accept me for whatever. They've seen me at my worst, and they've seen me at hopefully what's my best. I hope they'll get to see me at even better. But that's what this program has given me. It's given me real friendships, people that I can be my authentic self around and be myself. And that's what I've wanted all my life. And so I just was sharing this in another meeting. I hear people say I'm a grateful, recovering alcoholic or addict. I'm not there yet to say that I'm grateful that I've been through what I've been through, but I want to get to that point where I can say, I'm really glad I went through that because if I hadn't, I wouldn't be here today. But I am grateful for AA, and I'm grateful for the people in AA because without them and without the experiences that I've had over the last 436 days, I wouldn't be here because I was asked, are you suicidal? And I said, oh, no. But what I was doing was a slow death in how I was living. And if I had continued, I would have killed myself or someone else. And that would have been the biggest tragedy to me if I had killed someone else. So I don't know what else I can speak on. I think that's it. I think I've told one bad joke. That's enough. What else would you guys like me to share?
Yeah, thank you so much, Kim. So before we give her a round of applause, I would like to open it up for if anyone has any questions for Kim. And because we still have got like at least like 10 minutes. So
okay.
What was that, Kim?
I said I talked a little too fast, huh?
And that, no, you're fine. So if anyone have anything they would like to ask her. Oh, Bill has his hand up. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, thanks so much. Kim, I really enjoyed that. I just have one question for you. I wonder if you could please explain this.
So those are my sons, George and Clarence. That was their Christmas outfits 2 years ago or last year. And as you notice, they look like me. They're very hairy. Guys, I am a very sick dog mother. I dress my dogs up. They're on every year's Christmas card. So if you know me well enough to get a Christmas card, be prepared.
I'll ask you one more question, Kim. I wonder if you could tell us maybe just one story about the ninth step amends. Is there anyone that you made amends with that maybe it didn't turn out the way you expected?
So I'm glad you brought that up. So I had four big amends to make. Two of them were to my family, which went exactly like I thought it would. I knew they were going to be accepting and forgiving. The other two, I was scared to death. They were friends. One of the amends was a nurse that I worked with at a facility that knew I was spiraling out of control. And one of the last nights that I worked with her before I changed jobs, before I got caught, she was very angry at me and threw a drug screen cup at me in front of my coworkers and told me to go drug screen. And, of course, I wouldn't because I was full of pride and ashamed. And so I held a very big resentment towards her. And I stewed and stewed and stewed for about 2 years. And in looking at my part in it, that never would have happened if I wasn't in active addiction and alcoholism. And me holding that resentment towards her was wrong. So I severed our relationship, and it was on my list for me to go back to that person and make amends. And I was scared shitless, guys. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. But my sponsor said, you're going to do it. And so I finally did. It was so relieving to do it. I felt like I'd had gastric bypass surgery all over again. I felt like the 170 pounds had been lifted from me again. I was expecting her, let me say this. She reminisced on how much she was hurt, and so I sat there and I listened to it. I expected that, but I didn't expect the freedom that I would feel in after it was all over. The anger's gone. I've even reached out to her. I mailed her a Christmas card. I've talked to her on the phone. She's come by my house for coffee since that. And I had not talked to this person in over 2 years. So that's what making that amends did for me. I had another amends with a friend in the program that I had hurt. Even though I was in recovery, I hurt that person. And I was scared to death to call that person and make amends. But she was accepting because she's working her program. And again, shocked that it turned out the way that it did. I figured that she wasn't going to accept my amends, wasn't going to accept my phone calls or whatever, and she did because she's working her program. So the ninth step, going in and finally making amends, I've got to remember that just because I'm making an amends, people don't have to forgive me. They don't have to accept it. Luckily, in my case, everybody has. I have also made some financial amends. I was making killer money, guys, but I had a couple of financial things that I had never made right on, and I went back and made those. And to kind of tell you how my addict alcoholic brain works, because I'm a dog lover, instead of making financial amends to the people that I wanted to make them to, I suggested to my sponsor that I could donate to the Humane Society. She said no. I said, but those two people are deceased now. I can't get a hold of them. It doesn't matter. So I got it in my head. I could still send it to the Humane Society and never come honest with my sponsor. But when I sat and thought about it, I thought, I'll know. So needless to say, the Alzheimer's place and the open heart place got my donations, not the Humane Society. So I'm trying to work an honest program. But back to your question, I don't know if that answered it. Y'all, it is scary as hell to make amends to people that I have wronged, and I've wronged many people in my life. Some people I can't make amends to because they're people that I've had affairs with, and it would do more harm, things like that. I had to write a letter of amends to those people but never mail them. Some people are deceased. I wrote a letter to them. But people that I could actually make a physical amends to, my sponsor made sure that I did it. And I'm here to tell you, it is the most freeing thing because I no longer have to look over my shoulder and wonder who's going to find out what I've done. I've come clean with everything. That is the most freeing thing about this program, about me coming clean and being honest with my sponsor, my God, and some other people, what I have been and who I have been. I no longer have to look over my shoulder. I can sleep at night. I like to say that I now experience the H and the J, the happiness and the joy. I don't say it very often because I'm worried it's going to be taken from me, but I'm here to tell you, if somebody like me that has lied, cheated, and stolen their whole life can do it, anybody can do it. I like to brag that I'm sicker than most, but that's just my pride and ego. So anyway, all right, there you go.
Thank you so much, Kim. Is there anybody else who has any question or comment for Kim?
Leah, hi, my name is Leah. I have a question. Not really a question, more like a, what would be your best advice or guidance to anybody within their first year of recovery?
I would say don't make any drastic changes because your emotions are going to be all over the place. Remember that you being an addict and an alcoholic doesn't define you. It's one small part of your story. And remember that you are deserving of love and deserving of being clean and sober and deserving of recovery. If you can lower your pride and accept that it is what it is, you can't change your past. You're not promised tomorrow. If you can keep it in 24 hours, honest to God, you will start saying, I got everything I need for today. I can't make it up to so-and-so that I hurt yesterday. Can't change it. At one point, I'll be able to make amends to them, but I can't change what I've done in the past. It's gone. You can't do anything about it. And you know what? Again, we're not promised tomorrow. We can all be dead from COVID tomorrow, okay? So if you could try to keep it in the 24 hours, and just say, hey, you know what? I got a roof over my head. I got three hots and a cot, so to speak, three meals and a place to lay my head at night. And you know what? I'm alive and I didn't use today. If you can just say those things at the end of the day, I'm telling you, it has worked miracles for me because I've always regretted my past. I've always worried about the future. And by stop doing those two things and just spending the day, it was a game changer.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Like, you don't even know me, but it was like you're speaking right to me. Love it.
Oh.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good. You're welcome.
Okay, we have time for probably one more. Somebody has another one? Another question, comment for her? No. Okay. Okay, I'm going to call it then. Can we give Kim a round of applause then? Thank you for your experience, strength, and hope.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it very much. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Thank you, Bill Hatson. And Tammy, I owe you.
Okay, so we have come to the end of our meeting. The